Move out of 20A.
20A, this is in the English, would be 20A2 on the right side of the page. If you remember, the last subject that we discussed was that the Gemara had asked for the biblical source of the seven-day mourning period, Shiva, which is Shiva Yamin, 7 days of mourning. And then it gave an interesting biblical quote, which was from the book of Amos, Ve'apachti hagechem la'evel. I shall transform your festivals into mourning. And that gave us an exposition where mourning and festivals were considered to be equivalent. Now, we have already seen in just the passage before that there is a certain equivalence in terms of the doing on both those, contexts. And that was why we wondered whether even if your Shloshim could start on the festival, even though your Shiva couldn't start on the festival. Because there was an equivalence of doing between the festivals and the period of mourning. So our question actually comes, I think, logically out of that. Epistemologically, that's how it grows. It grows after we have said that there is a similarity of doing. Now we move to a question of definition. Okay? There is a commonality of definition then between holiday and mourning. In what way? Each is defined, apparently, says the Gemara, by a 7-day period of time. Because a chag is 7 days, and mourning is 7 days. Well, that's great, except for the fact that it's not always true. Okay? We found that, in fact, there was a definitional problem. Once we wanted to create an equivalence that was definitional, there was a problem there, because, in fact, one of the holidays is not 7 days. It's 1 day. It's 1 day, and that's called Shavuot. So that is what we did just before our last time, the end of the last time, and we said that, well, don't worry about that, because there is a 1 day issue. And sometimes, in fact, Shiva is 1 day long. When is it 1 day long? It is 1 day long for a Shmu'ah Rechoka. A Shmu'ah Rechoka is some as yet undefined situation where you learn about the fact that there has been a death of a close relative, but you learn substantially after the actual event happens. That's a Shmu'ah Rechoka. We will, as is the want of the Gemara, we will want to further define those terms. But so far, we haven't yet defined them. We know in general that there is such a thing called the Shmu'ah Rechoka, where a long time after the death you learn about it, and in that case, mourning is 1 day. Oh, so now this is good. There is still then an equivalence between the chag and the days of mourning. The equivalence works out in both of the possibilities that that the chag is sometimes 7 days long, and the chag is sometimes 1 day long, and in fact there is Shiva that is sometimes 7 days long, and there is Shiva that is sometimes 1 day long. That's where we ended last time. Okay? So, from there, the Gemara wants to learn more about this thing called a Shmu'ah Rechoka. And if there is a Shmu'ah Rechoka, a distant hearing, literally, there is also likely to be a Shmu'ah Krova, a close hearing. That is where we pick up now on page 20A2. Very good. Any questions so far? I didn't say anything new. Yes.
Where, say, a person has disappeared and has been presumed to be dead for a long period of time, but no remains are discovered until now, certainly with DNA, that could happen.
Correct.
Would this limited Shiva apply?
It might. But let's say, to give the facts of the case that you just described, let's take the World Trade Center. God help us and save us. You could reasonably say that a reasonable person would assume that if somebody was in the Trade Center before it fell down, and they never showed up after it fell down, even though you have no evidence, a reasonable case might be made that the person is dead. Okay? That may be a reasonable plus. So in that case, evidence is not the crucial datum of the Shmua Rechoka. It's not necessarily evidence. Okay? There could be other reasons to assume that a person is dead. Okay? I just wanted to say there's a caveat to what you were saying, but it is also possible that there would be circumstances where, in fact, you wouldn't hear until a long time afterward, and in fact, it would then be a Shmua Hoka, correct? That's correct.
Shmua is also used for rumor.
Correct, but it doesn't mean a rumor here. Here it does not mean a rumor. Okay?
So what happens if you assume someone died at the Trade Center, you mourned, and then in, you know, April of 2006, the remains are found on top of the Deutsche Bank building.
Right? Mm-hmm.
Is there any further ceremony, or, I mean, do you bury those remains?
Yeah, the only requirement would be the burial of remains. And there are some minor mourning customs in the reburial. In fact, it's almost a case of reburial here. There are slight mourning customs that do pertain in the case of reburial and might pertain in this case.
But not
Shiva. Not Shiva. No. We actually had a case of that not so long ago where I was asked that, whether you had to sit Shiva again. The answer was no.
If a Shiva starts after the burial and there is no burial, when at that point, what ignite a Shiva at that point?
Knowledge.
Only knowledge?
Knowledge, and I should say beyond just knowledge, certain knowledge.
Yeah, because you know there are hearsay. You know, a businessman went on a business trip and never came back. He could be alive with 15 women.
Correct. Correct.
15?
Correct.
At that time, it was not so many.
He wasn't that good a businessman, that's all. Yes, that's why I added the word certain. Because we would then have to define how do you achieve certainty, or what is a reasonable level of certainty, but in fact that could be a problem. And that's often a problem. That's why in wartime, for example, when people, classically, when Jews went to war, men gave their wives conditional gittin. They gave their wives conditional gittin. And the reason for that was to avoid the problem of being lost in action. Because if there were no proof, then she couldn't get married again. So you gave a conditional get, which would kick in certain circumstances, in which case she was much better off being divorced than being a questionable widow and not a real widow, because you could never ascertain that she would be a real widow, which was a very difficult position for her to be in. She'd be an aguna. That's called an aguna. Okay? Okay, here we are. Right side of 28:2. Tanu Rabbanan. This is now Beraita. Shmua Krova Noheged Shiva Ushloshim. Somebody who is classified as having received a current report, Shmua Krova, a recent hearing. I'll translate it like that, a recent hearing, as if it were Shmi'ah. Shmu'ah Krova, a recent hearing. That person, Noheget Shiv'ah Ushloshim, that person is required to observe both Shiva and Shloshim. Okay? Beginning, in fact, from the time he receives the report. Shmu'ah Rechoka, Eina Noheget Ele Yomechat. But a distant hearing, where in fact the news is delayed, we don't know yet how long that is, that person only observes Yom Echad one day. Ezohi.
And no Shloshim?
And no Shloshim, correct. And no Shloshim, just one day, period. One day of mourning, that's all there is. Okay? Yom Echad. Ezo hi krova, the ezo hi rechoka. What do we mean by krova, near? And what do we mean by far? What are these two situations? Krova betoch shloshim. Rechoka liachar shloshim divrei Rabbi Akiva. Oh, so krova, near, a near report, is one that comes within 30 days of the actual event of death itself. And rechoka, a delayed or distant report, that's liachar shloshim, after 30 days. And divrei Rabbi Akiva. And we see that this is the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. Now, if you have a setup like that, that you have immediately, it says Rabbi Akiva has got to be another point of view. Okay? V'chachamim omrim, but the sages say, achat shmua krova, v'achat shmua rechoka, noheget shiva u'shloshim. Interesting. The sages say it's exactly the same customs kick in if it's a near report or if it's a far report. Both of those cases observe Shiva, and both of those cases observe Shloshim. Okay? Now, of course, we have a dispute between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim, so let's see who wins. Amar Rabba Bar Chana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabba Bar Chana says in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, Kol makom shata motze yachid mekil, Rabbi Machmirim. Every time you find a case where an individual rules leniently and the majority rules stringently, Halacha k'rabbi. The law goes according to the majority. That's generally the case, okay? If you have an argument between an individual and the majority, the individual is the liberal, the majority is the stringent position, it goes with the majority, okay? Chutz mizahu. With the exception of this case. With the exception of this case that we are talking about. Sha'af al pi Rabbi Akiva mekel, because even though Rabbi Akiva has the lenient position, the chachamim machmirim, and the sages have the more stringent position, halachaka Rabbi Akiva. The law goes according to Rabbi Akiva, and there's a reason for it. Diamar Shmuel, because Shmuel has already taught us, and this you have already learned, halacha k'divrei mekel biavel, that the law goes according to the lenient position in cases of mourning. Right, so we already learned that position before, and that was Shmuel's position. We see that is brought from time to time, and in fact it's brought again in this case. Rabbi Akiva has the more lenient position, that is to say, lenient means less observance. That's generally the meaning of lenient. Okay, so there is less obligatory observance here, because Rabbi Akiva says, if you give a Shmuel Rechoka, you only observe one day of mourning. That's less observance. That, therefore, is the more lenient position. Even that today, frankly, some people would actually turn that upside down. Because it's not infrequent that people will say today something like, well, it's very hard. If you don't observe Shiva, that's not fair to the person. It makes it more difficult and not easier for the person. There's psychological reasoning behind that, okay? But that's not the way the Gemara would discuss it. Gemara means lenient, it means observance, additional observance that's required. Stringent is the additional observance, lenient is less observance. Okay? And as far as the laws of mourning go, in fact, because they so cramp your life, and may do that, we allow more leniency here. You don't have to have required observances. Now, this point of view, which we find in the Baraita, by the way, is not really as good as it seems, where it says that kol makom shata motzei achid mekel rabbi machmirim. This is stated as a general principle. Every place that you find that an individual takes the lenient position and the majority takes the stringent position, it goes according to the majority, the fact is that that's not true. It's not true. And very frequently in the Talmud, where you have these statements of general principles, and in fact, I can't think of any statement of general principle that's always true. It's stated as a general principle because it's usually true. But when you read it because it's stated in such a categorical fashion that it appears to be always true. So if you ever know, if you tell your children, for example, you say, this is the law, it's true, and it's true in all circumstances, and then say, but it's not true in the following circumstance, well, they're right. But it's still true. It's exactly what's going on here. Okay? That's a good way to say it. The exception proves the rule. We realize that every rule really has exceptions to it. No rules are ironclad rules. If they are, we really wonder about them. There must be something fishy about that rule. So that's the case here in the Talmud as well.
Well, in fact, I thought it was irrespective of whether it's lenient or stringent. The majority was supposed to rule.
That's certainly not true.
Yeah, that's another general
principle. Definitely. That doesn't work. Because it depends on how it's articulated. Yes, the Torah says that when a court makes a decision, the majority rules. That's true. But when the Talmud brings us a majority opinion and a minority opinion, that's not a court.
It's an argument.
It's an argument. It's a history of discussion on a subject. And it could be that the majority, in fact, has the day, or could be the minority does. And that's been a problem in jurisprudence throughout the years. When Rabbi Yosef Karo, for example, wrote his Shulchan Aruch, you know the reasoning process he used in deciding what the law should be in the Shulchan Aruch?
He told us.
Right. There were three codes of law that came before him. He put them in front of him. Whichever one was two out of the three is the law in the Shulchan Aruch. So it was a simple process of weighing the majority when you had three codes, and he just put whichever one was in most cases. Now, of course, that's always true, except when it's not true, as in this case as well. It's generally the case, but every once in a while he has an issue and he argues his own reason.
And why who decided that Shmuel was right here?
That's very interesting. We don't know the answer to that. We don't know the answer. So it appears to be, there are two possibilities. Either in the period after Shmuel is the middle of the third century. No, middle of the fourth century? No, he's in the middle of the third century. To the Rabbi Judah the Prince is 200 roughly. Shmuel is immediately after that. Okay? So it's the next generation after that. So it's the middle of the third century. So either it's right after that period, let's say by the end of the third century, or much after that. It's hard to judge. I don't think that this, and my sense from reading the text is that this is not an instance of the editor of the text, which would be considerably later, giving you his opinion that Shmuel always wins here. Because it seems to really be brought, so frequently brought, and it's brought as if it's a known thing. That's my sense of it, but I can't really give you a good proof of that.
There's a note on page 18a that says that his rule in halakhic issues dealing with mourning applies only to disputes between the Tanaim and doesn't extend to disputes between the Amoraim.
Mm-hmm. So would that affect this at all? No. And that wouldn't affect this particular discussion, because this is based on a baraita, because Rabbi Akiva is a Tana, and the Chachamim are Tanaim, so that would fit in this case. Well, that's true. In what the note is designed to do there is to discourage us from continually using this rule, because realize what we could do. We would say the law is according to the lenient side in mourning. Just, you can well imagine what that would do to the laws of mourning. particularly in the modern period. Really, if we said that the lenient position is way, the way we go in mourning, it wouldn't be long, perhaps, till you had no laws of mourning, or very few more laws of mourning, because the argument would be we always take the lenient position in mourning. So I think that's part of what the note is fighting against. It's a sort of orthodox sensitivity with which I can well identify. Okay.
I'm just wondering, the report, is that the receiving of the report or the issuing of the report?
The receiving of the report.
Because I mean, clearly today it wouldn't be so much of an issue, but it...
Oh, sense. Could be. Could be an issue. Let's say somebody's lost in wartime or lost in a jungle. We had a case here last year in Ozaru, actually. A case where somebody disappeared. Somebody disappeared. I mean, it wasn't a congregant, but it was the close, dear friend of a congregant. And I heard about this after they disappeared. You know, they didn't get a message from their son when he was supposed to call. And then the parents were wealthy, so they sent in a search party. This was in Central America or South America, someplace like that. They sent in a search party. Search party found nothing. So it took about 3 weeks till they found something. They finally sent in more search parties, and the hikers went in. They eventually found these two guys. Must have had some sort of calamity, hiking accident. It was a hiking accident. So that happens. You know, it happens.
But a report wasn't actually made.
There was no report. Well, there was no...
Prior to their...
Correct. But you can have other situations where, you know, people are far away and you just lose contact, particularly with a modern family the way it is.
Well, there was a situation in my family, but in like 1919 or 1920, my grandfather's younger brother drowned. And at the time, his father was in Israel. So I imagine in those days it was a long trip. And they buried him and sat Shiva. But when my grandfather's father, the father of the boy who had died, came back, they didn't want to tell him until a certain period had passed. And there was this horribly painful time when he kept asking where his son was, and they kept making up stories. And I never quite understood it, but I guess this is the reason.
Well, I think the basic reason, people try to be kind to their relatives, and they don't always do the right thing. But I assume that's what they were trying to do in the circumstance. They were not trying to hurt anybody. They were trying to do what seemed to be the kind thing, you know?
Right, but I think it had something to do with his having to sit Shiva.
Oh, could be. It could be that they were invoking, they knew about this. It could, if you think that they were the kind of people who would have known this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Then it's possible.
In your example of the hiker, was that a near report or a far report? Because they
it was easy. That was an easy one. That's a near report.
That's a near report.
Because the definition is 30 days.
Ah.
So in that case, it was an easy call.
Even if it would be, let's say, after 30 days, but that's the first time that they found the remains and they brought them home for burial, they would not sit Shiva?
Depends. The reality is, when you deal with these things, that you have to make a lot of judgment calls. Because, as we even saw last time, remember we saw last time that even on the Yom Tov, you can visit somebody, even if it's the Yom Tov, because the purpose is to bring comfort. So, you know, whether you call it Shiva or not, you know, I'm not sure. But we're not saying that you don't bring comfort to people.
Because my question is, Shmuah Rechoka, usually the burial took place elsewhere, and you just got to know it now, and you see it one day. In this case, if they found the remains, even though it's after 30 days, and they brought them home, it's like...
Well, an argument could be made that that's not Shmuah Rechoka. Particularly if you find remains, because remember the definition, the basic definition that we have of Shiv'ah. Shiv'ah begins after the burial.
Yeah, that's right.
So that is, in most cases, what triggers everything. In most cases, the only exceptions I can think of are these exceptions, like I mentioned in the beginning, the World Trade Center kinds of things, when you can identify remains in ways that are sort of not exactly what we meant in the other case, which I just described and you cited. So it's actually a different thing. Okay? Okay. So here we see the opinion of Rabbi Akiva is in fact the case here. And you'll see support now for this point of view. Rabbi Chanina, Atje Le Shmu'a De'avuha Mi Bechozai. A report came of the father of Rabbi Chanina's death. It's the death of the father of Rabbi Chanina came from Bechozai. And Bechozai was apparently some place that was very far away. All right, so the assumption here in the text is we're dealing with a Shmu'a Rechoka. Okay? It took a long time to get the message.
I was following it along.
Ata lakame de Rav Chista, he, that's to say Rav Chanina, came in front of Rav Chista in order to learn what the law is. Amar le shmu'a rechoka eina noheget ela yom echad. So he said to him, in a case of a shmu'a rechoka, delayed news, there is just one day of Shiva that is observed. Rav Natan bar Ami, ata le shmu'a de'imhe me bechozai. So this place, Bechozai, was obviously a faraway place in Babylonia. Right? The communications were slow. And so here's another person who was there. Rav Natan got information about the death of his mother in Bechozai. Ata lakame de Rava. Similarly, he comes in front of Rava now in order to find out what the law is. Amale hare amru shmura ruchoka eina noheget ele yom echad bilvat. And he says to him, it is said, namely the law is, that when you get a Shmu'a Rechoka, delayed news, there is only one day of Shiva that is observed. Okay? Now, the Gemara raises problems with this. Iteve. Iteve is an objection. Here, in the English, it says Rav Natan bar Ami challenges it. I'm not sure whether that's obviously true. Maybe it was he who challenged it. But Eteve, this point of view of Rava is disputed based on a baraita. Remember, that's a good way to argue. You've got a baraita that can disprove something. Bamedevarim amurim. This seems now to further define the case of the Shmu'a Rechoka. We said a Shmu'a Rechoka, you have one day of mourning. Now we say Bamem Bedevarim Amurim. In what case are we talking about that there is one day of mourning for a Shmu'a Rechoka? Bechamisha Meitei Mitzvah. That is true when we are talking about the five deaths that are a mitzvah. Five deaths that are a mitzvah. Five relatives. Five relatives. Now, who would the five relatives be? Well, let's just see who the exceptions are. Aval al-aviv alimo. But as far as a father and a mother are concerned, shiv'a u'shaloshi. Where the father and the mother are concerned, you observe shiva and shloshim. Very interesting. Okay, the baraita says that it's not as clear as we thought. There are a variety of people for whom you mourn. All right? You mourn for a son and a daughter, a brother and a sister. One more.
Spouse.
Okay? Those are the five. All right? The other are the parents. So here we see that according to this baraita, there's a difference in the way you observe the mourning toward parents and the mourning toward the other five relatives.
Why is it called Mitei Mitzvah? The other
one? Don't know.
That refers to the other five.
Correct, correct. That's the chamisha, the chamesh are the other five.
The five obligations.
You will see later on that Gemara is going to say that parents are different. Here's the answer. This is a good question. Now I can articulate the answer. Why are parents different? Because in fact there's a specific obligation of the Torah to a parent. What is it called? Kabed et avicha ve'et imecha. Honor your father and your mother. There is no such obligation toward any of the other five. However, there is a mitzvah to observe Shiva for the other five. However, when you get to the parent, there's a holdover from Kabed et avicha ve'et imecha. So that's referred to as somehow being unique and different. Whereas the others are in a way more limited. They're just mitzvahs.
I think we've touched on this before, but I don't remember the answer. The note here says that the five are brother, sister, wife, son, or daughter. Is there an assumption that the laws of mourning are incumbent only on a man and not a woman?
No. They're exactly the same for both. Exactly the same for both. So we'll,
where so does this come from? Rather
it
than
comes from the editor.
Okay.
In fact, when the law is articulated, as you'll see it, just a little further on, we'll see the source of this. It is put in terms, the law usually in the Torah is directed at men. So, in fact, the text, it does come out of the text that does assume that. But in fact, the law doesn't assume it. The law assumes it in the more general term of spouse. Okay? Which is not unusual. I mean, that's the case even in terms frequently. And we're much more sensitive to the gender nature of language than they frequently were. They're sensitive to the literary nature of language, but not always the gender nature of the language. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. Depends on the context.
When we have a case where one rabbi asks another rabbi how something's to be done, are there generally, is it a generational difference, or just the younger asking the older, or did they actually specialize? I mean, with the rabbis who were...
My assumption is that it's both generational, and if what we mean by generational is teacher to student. Mm-hmm. Because that's usually a matter of age, but I don't know that it's necessarily a matter of age. And I think that's what's being referred to.
Well,
you're dealing with an authority. Mm-hmm. And in each of these cases, these were the authorities, and they were therefore the teachers of the others, the ones who asked the question.
Did the rabbi specialize, though? I mean, do we have records of some
Oh, yes, some of them are specialized, yeah. So there's Shmuel, for example, in the areas of economics. The law will occasionally the laws goes according to Shmuel in economic matters, for example. Why? Because he knew more about the subject. So you do have stuff like that. Well, it'll happen occasionally. The laws of Iser and Heter go according to Rav. Assumption is that he knew more about those subjects. His reasoning was more cogent. His analysis was better. And the tradition therefore came to accept his opinion in those areas as a klal, as a general right. principle. And again, in a general principle like that, it was open to exceptions, but it was generally true. Okay, so now, of course, so this is a challenge from a Baraita, but it doesn't matter that you get challenged, the challenge is challenged. Okay, Amar le Yechidahi. He says to him, or it could be said to him, Yechidahi. That is the opinion of an individual Tana. An individual Tana. Velo svira lan kavate. And we do not accept his view. Okay? I mean, in truth, we see that the Tanaim disagree with each other. So just because you bring a Baraita, you may only be bringing half of the Baraita. You may only be bringing an individual opinion, which was a minority opinion. And generally speaking, we know that the minority opinions don't apply. Okay? When do they apply? They apply in mourning, okay? They apply in mourning. The lenient opinion seems to have greater standing in mourning. Well, in this case, for example, if we say in the case of a father and a mother that you have to observe Shiva of 7 days and Shloshim of 30 days, is that lenient or stringent? Given the way we define our terms, that's the stringent position. If an individual has taken the lenient, the stringent position, and the majority has taken the lenient position in the laws of mourning, which do you think will win? Obviously, the lenient position, for two reasons. First of all, it's the lenient position in mourning. Secondly, it's a majority as opposed to a minority. There'd be absolutely no reason to accept this minority opinion. Right? It's both a minority opinion and it's a stringent opinion. Okay? So far, so good? Right, so that's the answer to him. Lo sphere lankabate. We do not accept his view. Okay? Now we learn who this minority opinion is. The Tanya. Okay, we see what the background of this. Ma se umet aviv shal Rabbi Tzadok beginzak. Once it happened that Rabbi Tzadok's father died in a place called Ginzak. The assumption here is, again, we're dealing with a faraway place, and we're dealing with a Shmuel Rehoka. V'hodi'uhu li'achar shalosh shanim. And they told him about this after 3 years. So it took 3 years for him to find out that his father had died. Uva v'sha'al et Elisha ben Abuya. And he came and he asked Elisha ben Abuya. Now the commentators say here that this is not the same Elisha ben Abuya we're used to, which is probably correct because this appears to be something that is at a different time and a different place, but who knows. Vav sha'al et Elisha ben Abuya uzekenim she'imo, and the elders who were with him. V'amru, and they said, Nahog shiv'a u'shloshim. Observe both 7 days of Shiva and the 30 days of Shloshim. Okay? U'cheshemet beno shel Rabbi Achia bagola. And when the son of Rabbi Achia died in the diaspora, again, the assumption being it was far away, and his father then, who lived in the land of Israel, learned about the death of the son. Yashav alav shiv'a u'shloshim. Okay? He sat 7 days of Shiva and 30 days... Sorry, the son of the diaspora.
7 and 30.
Correct. So the note says, apparently Rabbi Achia followed the view of the sages who took issue with Rabbi Akiva in the Baraita cited earlier. So that is in fact the case, because this is not a father-son. It's the opposite. This is the father sitting for the son, not a son sitting for the father.
It's one okay? Five.
Okay. Now the Gemara says, Eini, is this in fact the case? V'ha Rav bar Achua de Rabbi Achia. Rav was the son of Rabbi Chia's brother. In fact, the name was Ivo. It's a complicated relationship there. They were half brothers and sisters. So they were related, but they didn't have the same parents. Okay? So it's an interesting special case here. Dehu bar Achte de Rabbi Chia. And he was also the son of Rabbi Chia's sister. Kisa likla hatam. When Rav went up there, that's to say, when he went, Allah means he went to Israel. He went Aliyah. So he went from Babylonia, which was low. It's always Yiridata Babylonia and Aliyah Eretz Yisrael. So when he went up to Eretz Yisrael, Amale Abba Kayam, Rabbi Chia asked him, is your father alive? Amar le ima kayemet? It's very interesting. He wouldn't answer his question to tell him that his father had died. He wouldn't answer his question. Instead, he turned it around to ask another question. you know, why don't you ask me whether my mother is alive? So by not answering, he answered. Okay? Amar le ima kayemet. So he tries the opposite. Is my mother living? Is your mother alive? Amar le abba kayem. Right? So he won't answer the question. Here is, you know, he doesn't want to be put in the position of giving bad news. Amar le leshame. So he now understood, and he says to his servant, Chalotz li minalai, take off my shoes. I tell that in the story. This is really a very beautiful story where, you know, people don't want to deliver bad news. And it's so interesting. I mean, it's such a big deal to take off your own shoes. He doesn't take off his own shoes. He tells the servant, take off my shoes. Take off my shoes. Veholech. Sorry, can't read this. Veholech acharai, and come after me. Holech acharai, bring after me. Kelai levet amirchatz. My clothing, carry my clothing after me to the bathhouse. And that, of course, is a difficult thing to understand halachically. Because we know that when you're mourning, you can't take a bath. You can't take a bath. So, apparently, the story, the way to understand this is then, that he had a very short shiva. Right? Because it was a shmua rechoka. It was a delayed report. He has a short shiva, which is symbolized by taking off the shoes. And remember, in theory, if we're talking about one day of shiva, we haven't yet said what that means. It could conceivably mean mitzata yom kechulo. Okay, sha'achat. It could be just sha'achat mean, you know, a public recognition. Doing something that publicly declares you're accepting upon yourself this status of shiva, and immediately thereafter it's over. So it could be that that's really what is being demonstrated here, and the result is that it's only one day. It's only one day. Shma minatla. Learn from this three things, the Gemara now says. Shma mina avela sor bina ilata sandal. First of all, learn from it that a mourner has to take off his shoes. Right? Obviously, that was part of the story. Ushma mina shmua rechoka eno no helgat eliyom echad. And learn from this that a delayed report kicks in just one day of shiva. One day of shiva. Ushma mina miktzata yom kechulo. And learn that even in that case, a partial day is considered a whole day. Okay? All of this we would have. Alright? But, as the English says here, but if Rabbi Chiya maintained that a delayed report requires only a minimal mourning, then why did he observe a full term of Shivan Shloshim when he received the delayed report of his son's death, as recounted in the previous Baraita? This apparently is the same Rabbi Chiya. In this case, we have a Shmua Rechoka as one day. In the last case, we had a Shmua Rechoka was 7 days. The same person. There's an easy way to deal with that. The answer is Rabbi Chiya Lechud, Rabbi Achiya Lechud. One person was called Rabbi Chiya, and the other one is called Rabbi Achiya. They're two different people. So you can't say that one person did two different things. It's not one person, it's two different people. You thought it was just a pronunciation difference. And Rabbi Achiya was the same as Rabbi Chiya. And then in one place they pronounced it Chiya, in one place they pronounced it Chiya, with an olive in front of it. No, it was two different people. So therefore we understand why there were two different customs.
If this was a Shmua Rechoka, and Shmua Rechoka usually is lenient, why he tried to avoid giving him the Shmua Rechoka? Because it could be like 1 minute and it's over. So why is the whole game of playing not to give him the information?
For the same reason that people don't like to talk about these things, which you referred to before, Nancy. I mean, even if it's, people just don't like to talk, to give bad news.
No, but I realized it was the 30 day, he had come back within the 30 days, and they wanted him to just observe one day of Shiva, probably.
It's very hard for many people to talk about these things. Very hard.
But it's not being avoided, it's just being dragged to a longer career.
Well, no, the way they do it, maybe, I don't know, you may have, as an Israeli, had teachers like this. I date from a time when teachers would sometimes answer questions in this way. I remember one time, for example, I'll give you an example. I went to a Shiva house once, and first of all, there was a conversation going on between Dr. Finkelstein, who was then the chancellor of the seminary, and Rabbi Abe Halkin. You know, his son writes in the Sun and...
Hillel Halkin
is his son. So I was a student of Abe Halkin and of Dr. Finkelstein. So I'm listening to them have a conversation. They're talking, he does this, and he does that, and he does this, and he does that, and so I'm listening to the conversation. Only afterward did Neil Gilman explain to me that they were talking to each other in the third person.
What?
They were talking to each other in the third person.
Oh.
He meant I. It was considered inappropriate and too forward to say I. A humble person never would speak in his own name. Instead, he would speak in the third person as he. There's a certain type of modesty. This was at a Shiva, but they might have done it elsewhere. But this was in a public environment where there were other people sitting around listening to them. And they wouldn't speak of themselves in the first person. They would only speak of themselves in the third person. Okay? So... There's a certain type of discourse that, or the resort to euphemism. In Hebrew, you would never say that somebody is blind. You can't say that somebody is blind. We used to have that, you know, there still are. I'm sure there are many cases where we don't say what's actually happening. To use an example which is a controversial example, somebody who has a homosexual lifestyle, how are they described?
Okay.
They're gay. And that's obviously a euphemism. That's an effort to deal with something that's very difficult to deal with a, not even a neutral term, but a positive term. Blind in Hebrew is sagi nahor, filled with light.
Aramaic, I think that's coming from this period.
Correct. But it's used even in modern Hebrew today.
It is used in the modern Hebrew.
Correct. Way. And you borrow things like that because they don't come from the modern sensibility. In a way, they're somewhat antiquated, but we still use these things. And the reticence about delivering bad news is a very interesting, you know, it'd been a fascinating study to see the government guidelines for doing this. I don't know, any of you ever read William Saroyan's book? What is his great book? The Human Comedy. Thank you. William Saroyan's book, The Human Comedy. There's an extraordinary scene in that book. I mean, it's a masterpiece, Saroyan's book, The Human Comedy. There's one scene where the son in the family has been killed in the war, World War II. He was killed in the war. And in those days, news would be delivered by the telegraph. The army would, I don't know if it was World War One or World War Two. Maybe it was World War One. The news would be delivered by the telegraph. The telegraph agent would bring a telegram to the family. And Saroyan describes the way in which the telegraph man walked up and knocked on the door, and he heard them talking. They were playing a song on the record player, and it was Joe's favorite song, and he was delivering the news that Joe had died. And the sister was saying, "Oh, Joe will come home again, and he'll hear the song." And the man with the telegram is walking up to the door, hearing all this, goes, the man with the telegram knocks on the door, drops the telegram, and runs as fast as he can the other direction. That's the scene in Saroyan's book. That's the idea here. You know, it's a terrible thing to have to deliver bad news. It's a terrible thing, you know. How do armies do? There was an article on this, I think, in the New York Times in the last 2 weeks. I saw
this
an article on
about
this.
The boy who didn't tell his parents he was back in Iraq.
No, I was thinking of. There was an article I remember about delivering bad news that somebody has died.
But they send somebody to deliver the news in person. They have a special. Oh, I know what that article was. That these people are not trained appropriately. That's what it was,
right.
To how to deliver the news, right. And how to deal with the family's reaction.
I was never in the Army, but when during the Vietnam War, they would frequently use chaplains for this. And my colleagues and would tell stories about when the chaplain would come and knock on the door, the people would go white because they knew and they saw a chaplain what was going to happen. This is what you're talking about here. It's this... Nobody wants to do things like that.
Nobody
it's
wants
a terrible, terrible thing to have to do. And that's what I think is behind the literary give and take of this little piece. Okay?
And today's Wall Street Journal is a story about the need to doctors to yet still be trained how to deliver bad news to a family about a child who is very sick, if not terminally ill. And it seems that Mass General Children's Hospital, Boston or Children's Hospital in Milwaukee, has piloted a program which is now going across the country to train doctors who cannot speak to parents in the manner that is really, in this article, is needed so that parents have all the information in order to help. So.
Okay. This week we're working. The battery is functioning. Okay. ברוך אתה אדוני אלוהינו מלך העולם אשר קידשנו במצוותיו וציוונו על ספירת העומר היום 21 יום שהם 3 שבועות לעומר. So this makes now 21 days, making 3 weeks of the Omer. See, it'll be on Wednesday nights. It's the week's kicking on Wednesday nights.
It's easy to count.
Question. If there are two opinions, if there's a more Machmer opinion and there's more Makil opinion, and the majority follows the Makil opinion, is it wrong? You select to follow the more stringent view?
Okay. That's a good question. In fact, the tradition eventually determines the answer to that question. An individual doesn't determine it. The tradition, the community determines it over a period of time. We have this today in modern Jewish life, for example, very common, where it's much more popular to take stringent opinions than to take the lenient opinions. So for a while, you know, that it was the opposite. It was the lenient opinion. Yeah. Sorry, early on, 75 years ago, that was the progressive thing was to do that. Today, the progressive thing is to take the stringent opinion.
Because I was saying, like, in one of these situations, so if your son, if you find out that your son is dead after, you know, a while, and you're only obligated to mourn for the one day, Is it wrong if you elect to do the full 37 days?
As I said, in fact, the tradition determines that. So the tradition determines that, in fact, as we'll see, because so far we haven't come to a conclusion about this, but the law is lenient in this circumstance.
But anyway, with mourning, isn't it also a community isn't it? I mean, it's beyond what you decide. It has the community sort of.
Right, it's community standards that really take precedence more than the individual's desire.
So it's not possible that the same Rabbi Chia felt the need to sit 7 days and observe Shloshim for a son.
It's highly unlikely.
Because it would be wrong for, I mean, this is the question.
Yeah.
It's actually forbidden to go against the community.
We go according to the community standards, correct. Which doesn't mean
so
that
you're... So it's wrong to sit extra if you're obligated to only sit one day?
Correct. Well, when we talk about sitting, we mean observing all the laws of Shiva. It's not to say that you can't take off the time. It's not to say that people shouldn't visit you. Not to say any of those things. Is all of those things are perfectly fine. But is the community obligated to visit you? No, the community is not obligated. It is only obligated to visit you one day. Should it visit you more? Probably the answer is yes, if you give them that opportunity. So what we're talking about is the full weight of the law. Not these. You're not talking about liberals here. You know, the law is the law, you observe the law, and when the law isn't the law, it's just not the law, but it doesn't mean that you can't do certain things. Mm. It's not obligatory.
What happened to me, my brother died when we were living in Israel.
Was your brother living in Israel?
What?
Where
no,
was your brother?
He was living here. And my sister-in-law spoke to her rabbi. She didn't want to let me know because we had just moved to Israel and had a new job. So she didn't want me to feel obligated to come back for the funeral. So she consulted her rabbi, and the rabbi said, if you want to be nice, wait a month and write to him. And that's what she did. But I was very angry because she
didn't let
me.
You were a more modern person. Correct. We wouldn't do that today. I mean, nobody would do it. You know, in that same time, probably, if God forbid, a person had cancer, they would say, don't tell them. It's the kind thing not to tell them. You know, there was a way of thinking not so long ago. We're not talking about 100 years ago. It was in our modern experience where it was considered to be kinder to keep news from people than to share news with people. We don't believe that anymore.
Well, it's the information age. It would be a contradiction in terms.
Even before the information age. I mean, even before a computer, I remember that we were discussing this in terms of medical ethics, that it was the cancer patient, you know, how should a doctor deal with a cancer patient? Should the doctor be patronizing? The old days, it used to be considered to be beneficial to be patronizing. The only kind of a good doctor would be the doctor who would say, don't you worry, let me worry. But doctor, I want to know what's wrong. Don't you worry. I'm the doctor. You're the patient. Don't worry. I'll worry. That was considered to be good medical practice. You have a doctor like that today, punch him in the teeth. You know, that's the end of his practice.
On the notification, I would assume that in most cases, it depends how close a relative it is that passed away. If it is among the so-called five cases, then the obligation would be to notify as quickly as possible.
It's not going to be an issue anymore.
Sorry?
It's not an issue anymore. I mean, it's not going to be an issue for us. I don't think that your rabbi would give you the same answer today.
Now, this was 35 years ago.
Yeah, I'll tell you, 35 years ago was a different world in terms of it. We had different expectations 35 years. Let's move on. Okay? Amar Rabbi Yossi Bar Avin. Rabbi Yossi Bar Avin said, Shama Shmu'a Krova Barego. If you receive a near report, that is to say within 30 days, and it's on the Rego, it's on a festival, Ulamotze'e Arego Na Setrechoka. And by the time the regal is over.
So it's from 24 to 29 days.
Correct. Okay. It's an interesting problem. We've learned now that it's one day, right? The 30 days. So a regal is seven days long. So let's say you receive it's 24 days. By the time 7 days are over, or 23 days even, because the 30th day is going to be the last day of the regal, day after the regel when you could begin to observe it, it would already be the 31st day. 31st day is no longer Shmua Krovat, Shmua Rechoka. So the question is, do you observe 1 day or do you observe 7 days? Do you observe Shloshim or do you not observe Shloshim? Okay? So tell me the Gemara thinks on these things.
No, this is the first year of law school for 500 years.
Yeah, correct. Law school's never been different. I'm sure you guys did the same thing as the Gemara. Okay, Shema Shemim, Ula Motzei HaRegel Naaseh D'Chalka Ole Lo Ve'eno Noheg Ela Yom Echad. Alright, here it says Olelo, the festival is included in the 30 days. The Eino Noheg Ele Yom Echad, and he only observes 1 day of mourning. So that was interesting. Even the festival counts, the 7 days of the festival will count, or however many days there would be on the festival that when you had gotten, you know, actually found out about it. But as far as the observance of the Shiva goes,
it's only one day after.
Tani Rabbi Ada Demin Kesari. This is now a teaching of Rabbi Ada of Kesaria, of Caesarea. Kameda Rabbi Yochanan. He taught this before Rabbi Yochanan. He's teaching a Baraita. Shama Shmua Krova. He heard a near report. B'Shabbat. On Shabbat. Ulamotzei Shabbat. Naaset Rechoka.
So it's the last day.
Shabbat is now the last of the 30 days. By the time it's Motzei Shabbat, it's 31 days.
Right.
So the question is, do you observe 7 days of mourning or 1 day of mourning? Okay? Eino noheg ele yom echad. You only observe 1 day of mourning. So therefore, we see that what triggers it is the actual beginning of the practice of the mourning, and not just when the news comes. We had assumed that Shmua Rechoka and Shmua Krova were defined entirely by when you get the news. Well, there's a slightly different issue we have to also take into account. It's not only when the news arrives, but when you're able to act upon the news. And in fact, that is determinative.
Yeah, but this is only in Jewish tradition.
You better believe it. I can't tell, so I don't have a license to tell you anything else. Okay.
Because we have holidays that are 7 days. Most of religion don't have holidays of 7 days.
Okay. Korea or Eino Korea. Now we're talking about a case where you have a Shmua Rechoka. Shmua Rechoka, it's a delayed report. The question is, do you rend the garment at that stage? Do you have Kriya or do you not have Kriya? Rabbi Mani Amar Eino Korea. Rabbi Mani says, with that 1 day of Shiva, you don't rend. Rabbi Chanina Amar Korea. Rabbi Chanina says, you do rend the garment. Okay? So now we see that we have two opposite points of view. They will now discuss between them. Amar le Rabbi Mani le Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Mani, who says you don't rend, you don't tear, says to Rabbi Chanina, Bishlama le Didi. My point of view makes sense. Right? Eino Korea. My point of view makes sense. The Amina Eino Korea. Because I say that you don't rend the garment. Hainu de la ika avelut shiva. Because there are not 7 days of mourning. So that's his argument. In order to have the obligation of tearing kick in, you have to have what's called Shiva. Shiva means 7 days of mourning. He is arguing then that that's logical. If you're going to have 7 days of mourning, then in that case you would tear. Okay?
Well,
look, it's only one point of view.
Right,
believe me, Rabbi Hanina doesn't agree with that.
We already heard this before festival. You already know that the festival's coming closer than 7 days.
Ela didachti amar koreh. But, excuse me, according to you, Rabbi Hanina, the Amrat Korea, you say that you're supposed to rend the garment. Kri'a b'lo shiva mi'ika. Do you mean to say that there is rending the garment without actual shiva? Okay, without this actual shiva? Okay.
Can I?
No, not yet. You've got to wait till we get into the argument here. Okay? So, Rabbi Mani says that Kriya is linked to the observance of what we call Shiva. You might even say it's called Shiva even if it's a shortened Shiva. But one day is simply not Shiva. Right? We can have a regal mafsik Shiva. Regal can cut off Shiva. To give you the problem that you raised before. But it's still called Shiva. Nobody is calling this day Shiva. Maybe. I'm just saying maybe. That's his point of view. Okay. So the answer is the other point of view will not be given.
Oh,
the low. Do you mean to say there can't be rending of a garment without Shiva? Not done. But it was taught. Isi Avuha de Rabbi Zera. Isi, the father of Rabbi Zera, teaches in a Braita. Ame Leachuha de Rabbi Zera. And others say it was the brother of Rabbi Zera. Kame de Rabbi Zera, in front of Rabbi Zera. Mi she'en lo chaluk likroa. A person who has no garment to rend at first. That is to say, assuming that you don't own a garment, you borrowed somebody else's garment. Okay, let's say you borrow somebody else's garment. It comes time for you to rend a garment. You don't have your own shirt. Comes time for you to rend your garment. Are you allowed to tear somebody else's garment? You can't do that.
Yep.
You know, very nice. We require you to tear a garment, but not if it's somebody else's. Okay, so you don't have the right to do that. Okay, so Misha ein lo chaluk likroa. Somebody who doesn't have a shirt to tear, v'niz damein lo betoch shiva, and it just so happens that this person gets a garment of his own during the shiva. Korea, he then tears that garment. So there's no way that this guy could have torn it for 7 days. Right? He doesn't start at the beginning of Shiva, which you might say is a necessity. He's not starting in the beginning, he's starting in the middle. And maybe this is like the guy who doesn't get the news till late, and he sort of starts late at the end. Maybe. Ani Rabbi Zera Batre. Rabbi Zera then responds. Bame devarim amurim. When does this apply? Bechamisha mete mitzvah. This applies in the five types of deceased relatives. Aval al aviv vi alimo korea volech. But for a person's father or mother, one rends the garment even after Shiva has passed. Okay? So, apparently, as far as apparent goes, even in the Shmuel HaChokah, which may be for one day or maybe for 7 days, we never decided that. But let's say it's for one day. Even if it's for one day, and you say that one day you don't have to rent, if it's for a parent, you have to rent. If it's a parent, Rabbi Sarah says you have to rent. Kitanya hahi lichvod aviv imam.
I thought for a parent you don't sit one day. I thought you sit seven.
No, we saw that was one possibility. But here he obviously is accepting the possibility that it's one day, that it is one day. Okay? But in that case, you have to tear. You don't have to tear for the other relatives. You do have to tear, however, for the parent. So the parent is still in a unique position for the same reason. It's because it's kibud aved.
Okay. In the early 1900s, there was a mass immigration to the United States. Many of those people left parents in Europe, and they came here. The communication was not what it is today. So they heard that a parent or somebody in the family died a month and a half later. They got the mail. What is the shiva at that circumstance?
Exactly what we're learning here. If it depends on whether it was 30 days, if 30 days have passed,
right,
then it's one day.
One day. Now, how about shloshim?
No shloshim. Nope. That's what it was. Okay. Now, look at note 17. In fact, the obligation to rend one's clothing is linked to the observance of Shiva. As for Rabbi Zeh, which is to say then, that if it were Shmua Rechoka, which is just one day, it's not Shiva, then there's no rending. As for Rabbi Zera's ruling that one rends one's clothing for a parent even after Shiva, right? That one day for the Shmua Rechoka, which we're observing even for a parent, Rabbi Zera says that there you do rend for a parent. It has nothing to do with the fundamental obligation to rend one's clothing after the death of a relative. Rather, it is a mere token of respect for a deceased parent. So it's an exception to the rule. Because we have an additional obligation of respecting a parent. So even where the rule wouldn't normally apply for the sake of the respect of the parent, we invoke it.
Do you rend and then just hang it up in the closet? Or
no,
you
no, you
wear
it. You would wear it for as long as you were sitting.
Well,
which could be...
The parent, it
could be
one day.
Correct.
So
not for shloshim.
No, just for one day. One would, of course, do the same upon receiving a distant report of a parent's death, but this has no bearing on the obligation to rend one's clothes for a non-parent. The halakha follows the view of Rav Mani. And what's Rav Mani's position? That is just one day.
That you don't rend your clothes.
You don't rend the clothes for the one day. Correct. Hence, in the case of the death of a relative other than a parent, if one did not rend one's clothing during Shiva, one does not do so after Shiva. That is to say, the one day that you would be required if you got a delayed report. Nor would one rend one's clothing on receipt of a distant report of their death. If the deceased were one's parent, however, one would rend one's clothing in either case as a token of respect. Okay?
The procedure of kriya, I understand, it's while you, before the burial, they do the kriya in general. Correct?
That's the way we
do
it.
We didn't study it here, you know, what it started, we're just now getting into it, a delay. But if you don't, the kriya is before the burial. But if there is no burial,
it's not clear when kriya has to be. It's not sure what triggers.
If there is a protocol, other places.
I think we'll see that. We'll get to that yet. Because you're right. We didn't read the details.
We didn't learn what ignited.
But kriya. There are a variety of circumstances when you can make kriya. There is, and we'll see in the Gemara. The Gemara, if I remember correctly, describes kriya when you get. If you are present at the time of death, you rend then.
Cool.
Right at the time of death.
While you are
onen. Even before you're an onen, or I guess you are an onen,
yeah.
Right? You're present. Somebody dies in your presence. You rent. The Gemara talks about that, and there is such a condition, such a tradition. So, in fact, the kriya is not the same as the laws of mourning. Even what you said is correct. What we do today is that we make kriya before the burial.
Before the burial.
So, obviously, it's not part of the laws of mourning. Because the laws of mourning kick in only after the burial.
After the burial.
after the burial. So it's before the burial, and these, therefore, are customs that are somehow worked in together with it.
If Shiva is technically 7 days, yet if a chag comes in the middle of your Shiva, if your Shiva becomes shorter, is there another term for a shortened Shiva? I know these days we call it Shiva.
Called a shortened Shiva.
Alliterative as it is. There's no Hebrew...
You actually said something in Hebrew with the holiday.
Well, I said the regel mafsik. Mafsik at the Shiva. Okay, regel is mafsik, cuts it off. Okay. Cuts it off. But there isn't a technical term.
So if you rend because someone has died in your presence, do you wear that garment for Shiva?
For the whole Shiva, yeah.
Okay. Do what?
That's
not our general custom. We don't do that. Right. Our custom today is that we specifically cut.
No, I kept the shell for the whole Shiva.
No, I'm saying that it's not our custom to rend at the time of death.
Sorry.
It's our custom to rend, we do it actually before a funeral. I don't know what the Israeli custom is, but
they do it. But when they gather together,
So
it's like a few yards away.
That's what we do the same thing. We do it in the funeral chapel.
Yeah.
That's what we do.
So would it be, to me it's such a beautiful symbol. Would it be disrespectful to rend at the time of death if you're there?
No.
I mean, there'd be nothing illegal about it.
No.
Just
not what's usually done, but it's certainly nothing wrong with it. And there are those who say that it is obligatory to, if you're present at the time of death. But we'll see, we'll get to that in more detail. Okay? Well, I think we can go a little bit further, and let's see if we can go. I think maybe we should cut it here, because this is a new subject, and... we'll start the new subject. Might as well start the new subject this time. It makes it easier to begin a new subject.
We haven't talked about Kriya yet.
No.
First
I don't think we've had anything about it.
The Kriya used to be when you heard about it and then you said the prayer.
You heard about it?
In other words, you hear a person's death in the